Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Usually on this show, we tend to cover cases that are unsolved because of awful police work. Well, in today's case, we get to see some A-class police work that helped solve a case 27 years later. My name is Sophia Talley, and this is True Crime In It. Before I get started, I just want to note that I've been knitting through every single show this season, but I've realized that I haven't been telling you guys what I've been knitting. So from now on, I'm going to let you guys know what I'm knitting before the show starts. So today I am knitting socks from my book, Two Socks in One, and then I am knitting it from this sock blank from Wonderland. I think it's called Wonderland Yarns. I'll put a link to it in the show notes, but that's what I'm knitting today. And socks are just the perfect thing to knit when I do true crime because it is mindless knitting. But anyway, let's get on with the show. Anna Mae Florence was a kind, good-natured 77-year-old woman in 1987. Her family actually moved her from her home in Backwoods, Alabama to Columbus, Georgia after the death of her husband. Her family just wanted her to be close and they wanted to get to know her and they wanted to introduce her to city life. And so she agreed to make the move. And her family, her sister and nieces, they took really good care of her. On June 26, 1987, Anna Mae was getting ready to go shopping with her sister and brother-in-law. But when they went to pick up the elderly woman, they were greeted with a gruesome scene. Before they could even get into her apartment, which was located in Delavan Drive, Columbus, on the north side, they heard screams coming from the apartment. A young woman is just bolts out of there, covered in blood. Her brother-in-law, Alonzo, reaches and grabs her arm to stop her. And she actually slips away from him because that's just how much blood she has on her body. And she just bolts. Alonzo chases after her, but she threatens to shoot him if he continues to pursue her. And Alonzo, not knowing what's going on, this woman is covered in blood, decided to go and check on his sister-in-law. But unfortunately, when he makes it to the scene, it's too late. Anna Mae Florence is deceased, with the cause of death being stabbing. At this point, Alonzo noticed that there's just a lot of blood everywhere. And he notices that there is blood on a mayonnaise jar, possibly hinting that maybe Anna Mae used this jar to defend herself. So police investigate and start questioning the neighborhood. They know they are looking for a young woman. And so they fingerprint all the women who fit that description from the neighborhood. But all they have at this time is 1987 is fingerprints. They can't look up DNA and none of these fingerprints are matching. Something else that they found out, something else that was noted by witnesses in the area, was that there was a young woman who was soliciting for money under the guise of a fundraiser. She was going door to door asking to raise money for, I swear, every witness had a different fundraiser that she was going to raise money for. So they were looking for. At the scene, they also found a bloody fingerprint on the wall. And so they had this along with another fingerprint on the mayonnaise jar. But that was it. All they had at this point was two fingerprints and a very broad description. Finally, detectives get the tip of a lifetime. So an anonymous caller calls the station and claims that he was at a party and heard a young woman talking about how she stabbed an elderly woman. He claimed that she had scratches on her as if she was in a fight. And after some convincing, he gave his name as Odell. And he said that the woman's name was Danita Campbell, who was an old schoolmate. They somehow managed to convince Odell to come down to the station for further questioning. And after this session, they actually convinced him to wear a wire in hopes of catching Danita in a confession. But after this agreement, Odell just ghosted the detectives. They never heard from him again. And so they were back at square one with only the name of Danita Campbell to use. So they actually end up tracking down Danita. They did a traffic stop and was able to identify her. And they brought her into the station. They fingerprinted her. Danita was known for doing petty crime in the area. And so they were sure that they had their woman. But unfortunately, their fingerprints were not a match. And so with this lead just gone, this case sits for about 25 years. Finally, one day, a niece of Anna May named Rebecca Robertson contacted Columbus's cold case squad, the dynamic duo Kathy Justice and Ralph Taylor. And she pleads with them to take on her aunt's cold case because the family just needed to know what happened to their loved one and who was responsible for this awful murder. When Kathy and Ralph get a case, they don't have a lot of time to work with it just because of, essentially, I'm assuming, budgeting. This was their last shot to get this case solved. And so they went back to square one and they decided to interview the witnesses, starting off with Odell, the one who gave the original detectives the wrong information. And so they track him down fairly easily. And when they get there, something is just off. The Odell that's sitting in front of them did not know anything about the case. He got things wrong. He was confused. And then finally, when they played the tape for him, he admits that it's not my voice. And they're like, what do you mean that's not your voice? The person who called in not only gave Odell's name, but gave his social security number and birthday. And so very intimate information. The Odell on the tape spells out his address, and the Odell in front of the detectives in current time says, that could not have been me because I am illiterate and I'm not able to spell my address like that. And it's at that moment when detectives Kathy and Ralph realize that this Odell is a different Odell. And so they ask the man in front of them, okay, think, who dislikes you or who has your personal information that they're able to impersonate you? And Odell thinks and he says, my cousin Chris. Back in 1987, Odell used to bring his cousin Chris to the unemployment office where Chris would help him fill out forms because he's illiterate and he needed someone that he can trust to fill out these very sensitive personal information. And at the time when Chris was called in pretending to be Odell, police did not bother to check his driver's license that would prove this. You know, they just took everything he said at face value, which is insane because this is a murder case. I mean, just really, really poor police work back in 1987. And whenever police work is this poor in a Black neighborhood, I just always think about, you know, is it purposefully poor because they do not care? Or is it poor because they're dumb? I'm just being honest here. And so Kathy and Ralph track down Chris, the original caller, and they knock on his door. His mother answers. But when they try to talk to Chris, he refuses to give any information. He just says, I know nothing about it. And they're like, Chris, you're the one that started it with the anonymous call. You know, like they're like, we're only here because you called us first. But still, Chris just did not want to give up any information. Finally, they played the original recording of the tip for Chris's mother, who then tells her son that he should just give it up now and tell the detectives everything that they need to know. So they pretty much told his mom on him, and it worked. Once his mom got involved, he started to talk. So he admitted back in 1987 that a female friend came up to him and confessed to the stabbing of Anna Mae Florence. She came up to Chris on her own accord and said that she was in trouble on that day in 1987 and that she actually owed a debt to a drug dealer. And so she decided to run this scheme in which she would ask her neighbors for money, claiming that it's a collection for a charity, but no one was really biting. That is until she went to Anna Mae's house. And Anna Mae answered the door, and when this young woman asked her for money, she took out her money belt, which held all of her money, because at the time, Anna Mae did not believe in banks, which wasn't quite uncommon for people who lived through the Great Depression. And so when she reached in her money belt to give this young woman money, the woman sees that Anna Mae has more than the few dollars that she is offering. And so that is when she decides to attack. And then we know what happens next. And at first, you know, Chris doesn't want to give up the name, but finally he says one name, and that is Zena. So he only gives this first name, but Zena is a very unusual name. And so it doesn't take detectives long to identify her as Zena Roberson. They found her driver's license from when she was 16, and they found that this license was from the Columbus area. And so they were able to find her last name, Roberson. But from there, all they can find was that she lived somewhere in Georgia and that she worked at a small takeout restaurant, I think called the Gravy Boat, of all places, where she worked as a manager for many years. And she actually lived a straight life. And this person that they were looking up, like, they just weren't sure if this was the right woman, because A, this man has already lied to them previously, and B, this woman was just a manager at the Gravy Boat. You know, her only run-in with the police was a shoplifting charge in 1999. And so she seemed to be like a regular, degular citizen, but still they had to see if she was their woman. And at this point, they are running out of time. They really need to solve this case now or pretty much never. But they decide to run the fingerprints collected from Zena's 1999 shoplifting charge, and they are a match for the fingerprints found at the scene of Anna Mae's murder. So they knock on Zena's door, and when she answers, Kathy claims that it looked like she knew why they were there. Zena sits down, and Kathy claims, and this is a quote from Kathy from a Netflix documentary that I watched on this, that Zena's pores just opened up and that she started sweating from the top of her head all the way down. She was just sweating all over and was just super nervous. Now, Kathy and Ralph know that they have their person. They know that they have their murderer here. But they have to be careful what they say. They were able to arrest Zena and bring her back in for questioning, but they couldn't question her too much because they really wanted her to trap herself in a lie before she requested a lawyer. And they said that all they really needed her to do was deny being at the apartment because they had evidence of her being at the apartment. And so Zena says during that interview that she's never been there, that she didn't know who Anna Mae was. And she says this several times before she asked for a lawyer and the interview stops. But at this point, they had it. They had all that they needed to prosecute her. So Zena's trial ends in August 2014. Zena does admit that she was regretful of what she did. And she says in the courtroom, "I am sorry for everything. I wish I could bring her back, but I can't. I am so sorry." End quote. And all of Anna Mae's family members are there to testify and to confront Zena. Here's a quote from one of Anna Mae's nieces named Linda Perry. "Because we thought it would be a good place for her and we can get to know her better, in a short time she was killed. She wasn't just somebody you just threw away. She was somebody to care about. I want her to be cared about in this courtroom. May God have mercy on you." On August 25th, 2014, Zena was sentenced to 15 years to life in prison, and that is where she remains now. I wanted to cover Anna Mae's case today because it's not often where we get to see a conclusion to these cold cases. I often cover cold cases on my show, but a lot of the times they just end there without any new information. And with this case, I just wanted to show how good old-fashioned police work can lead to an answer. And Anna Mae's family are actually very friendly with the detectives, Kathy and Ralph, and they see them as part of their family, and they are very thankful for the work that they put in while investigating Anna Mae's murder. And that's just not something that we see a lot in these cases, and I just wanted to show how digging and investigating and also just luck, they were able to pick up this case and solve it over 25 years later. My name is Sophia Talley, and this is True Crime and Knit. For more information, including show notes, please visit www.thedrugknitter.com/truecrime. Stay safe, my friends. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.